This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're with me, Melissa Idris, Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani on The Morning Run, 7:47 right now. And coming up in 15 minutes or so, we've got The Breakfast Grill. Julian, you're going to be speaking to the group founder and managing director of OCK Group, Sam Uy.
They do telco towers, which is a very good way of getting exposed to the mobile sector and the mobile growth. The thing about telco towers, each of them is worth about, depending on whether it's a big or small structure, between 100,000 and 300,000 ringgit. And you've got to install a lot of this around the country, the cost of which is, goes into the billions of dollars. So right. It is a good service for companies to come around to bring these different mobile players together to share the towers. And this will lower the capex costs of a lot of these telco towers. And also, they are expanding into the ASEAN footprint, which is, we all know that countries like Indonesia, Cambodia, Myanmar, they're on the cusp of growth. So it's really an advantage to go there. But how do you handle political risk and other policy risks, right? So these are some of the questions that I would ask him.
Fantastic. Stay tuned for The Breakfast Grill coming up after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. That's Sam Uy, the group founder and managing director of OCK Group. Now, back to business news. Malaysia Airlines and Emirates, they've added 15 destinations within Malaysia under their codeshare agreement. So some of the routes are to places like Langkawi, Penang, Alistair Kota Baru, Kuala Terengganu, Johor, and the list goes on.
I think survival is the order of the day for Malaysian Airlines for the time being. This is a very short-term measure, I think. They have to cut costs, cull staff, rationalize routes. They're really tying up all the route loose ends, regroup before thinking about their long-term plans again. And hence, I think a lot of these alliances with people like Emirates and with Oneworld that has the effect of expanding their route network without actually pushing up cost.
That's right. So any talks on some closer management ties between Emirates and Malaysia Airlines may likely not be the case, particularly when these airlines, Emirates, for instance, just got burned on Sri Lankan Airlines because of a personal disagreement with the then president, Mahindra Rajapaksa. Of course, these short-term measures may be needed to stem OPEX, and also they have to rationalize their internal processes accordingly. And I think MAS also has other existing code shares with Oneworld, where they can perhaps even expound on it.
Well, this feels like a win-win situation for both airlines. However, I don't know whether both get the equal amount of benefit. I mean, to me, it seems like Malaysia Airlines stands to gain quite a fair bit from this alliance with Emirates. So I'm wondering whether Emirates will get the same kind of benefits.
The interesting thing about this deal is not Malaysia actually piggybacking on Emirates' network, because that has already been done, right?
Yes, that's right.
They're part of a deal with Emirates, but this is about Emirates coming into Malaysia.
Piggybacking
on
Malaysia.
So that's really
Airlines.
Interesting. They are the center of the world, and a very strategic location, the Middle East, right in the middle of the world. But they are offering their customers a chance to visit the different states in Malaysia. You know, in particular, Langkawi, Penang, KK, what have you, Kuching. Some of these destinations within Malaysia are major tourist destinations in their own right. So offering something to the Emirates clients.
But one thing I would like to highlight is that Malaysia Airlines, because of the fact that they are Oneworld code-sharing partners, they are, of course, doing business with some of the competitors with Emirates as well, including Qatar Airways. So I don't know whether, the relationship is going to be, their relationship with Qatar Airways is going to be reduced because of the heightened relationship with Emirates.
Well, still on the aviation sector. So Petronas Dagangan, their subsidiary Kuala Lumpur Aviation Fueling System, or KAFS, or CAFS, they are seeking an estimated 456 million ringgit from Malaysia Airports Holdings, MHB. And the reason for this is because their 50-year concession period to operate the aviation fueling system at KLIA has been cut in half.
Sorry, this reminds me of a tiff that Bumi Amarda is having with Woodside, who is also cutting short the FPSO contract. So it's kind of similar, but this is all about refueling of aircrafts. And I think that Malaysia, again, is one of those destinations where a lot of planes come through. I mean, we have the biggest budget airline in this region, so a lot of planes do pass through here. So I think this is something that would unravel.
That's right, particularly on the fact that numbers or airport traffic numbers are increasing. KLIA2 traffic actually grew 20%, for instance. But there is a negative growth for the main terminal, and I think this is due to the movement of Jetstar and also Malindo out into KLIA2. So some kind of overall net effect of traffic movement there. So we would see this business getting more lucrative over the year.
7:52 right now, and Pavilion REIT, they've told The Edge Financial Daily that it's still has an appetite for more acquisitions, provided they are, of course, of quality or lucrative assets. And this is just after Pavilion REIT has completed two major asset purchases for $646 million recently.
I think this is about management of the mall. Different malls will have different performances, and Pavilion is one of those malls that focuses on the affluent market. In fact, the very affluent market, a lot of rich tourists go there, a lot of rich local people also go there, and this has to be differentiated from malls that focus on the mass market. And as we have seen in the discussion about Empire Mall in Damansara, there has been some problems where, according to The Edge Weekly, and Joyce Goh actually came on Pressing Matters to talk about this, they say that a lot of the tenants have requested for a delay in the opening. So it is a reflection of the kind of weak sentiment that may exist in the mass consumer market. But I guess with a mall like Pavilion, I mean, they're going to open a few more high-class malls, right, in Pavilion Damansara, in Bukit Jalil. They are targeting a very specific market. By the way, the Pavilion Damansara and Bukit Jalil malls are still under the sister company. It's not within the REIT. It's under Malton. But there is a pipeline there with the sister company. Once those assets are stabilized, they can be injected back into Pavilion REIT to give the shareholders a lot of yield.
So, of course, the yield the shareholders that are getting right now averages between 5 to 6, some of them even 7%, including so one of the high performers include Axis REIT at 7.6%. One of the lower REITs is Pavilion REIT at 5%. But you're right, Julian, whether or not this is an interesting story of REITs, that remains to be the question, because there is some calls, for instance, in Singapore at least, to consolidate REITs, and there is for a good measure right now, because it seems to be a perceived notion that there's just too plenty of REITs going around.
Yeah, I think going back to the yields is very interesting, because it's a reflection of who is arguably more demanded by investors, right? We covered this in S&M. The lower your yields, your dividend yields, that means the more highly valued the company is. And Pavilion REIT right now is trading at a pretty attractive dividend yield of just over 5%. Whereas if you look at Axis REIT, which is really in the industrial office space and not so sought after by investors, that's trading at 7.7% yield. So if you think that Axis won't go bankrupt, it's not a bad time to go into Axis, perhaps, because you're getting 7% yield there. Yeah. Certainly many times more than what you get in the FD rates. But, you know, of course, the hope is that somebody like Pavilion is in control of the management of the mall. This includes playing around with the tenancy mix, playing around with how much rental you can charge all these high-end brands. And it's all about how much you can get out of that small plot of land, right? I mean, we covered what's going to happen in Desa Kuda Lari condominium yesterday. And in fact, that was an exclusive by The Edge. They say that Desa Kuda Lari owners want to sell the mall en masse, which is a first in Malaysia, strata titles being sold en masse. But it's all about how much yield and how much money you can get from a small plot of land.
Yeah, well, and that is a really nice location, by the way. 7:55 a.m. Let's move over to the US, where Peugeot Citroën is looking to returned to the US after a quarter century's absence. Now, the French carmaker withdrew 25 years ago amid poor sales and some stiff competition from Japanese carmakers.
I like how you pronounced it, Melissa. You are really in the high
quite,
end.
Quite Parisian like that.
High end of things.
Do you shop at Pavilion?
Anyway, they want to go into US and go in service the car sharing market. Now, this is really interesting because with car sharing, I think there is room to make the cars a lot more efficient so that the drivers can make more money out of it, make it more cost efficient petrol-wise, maybe focus on hybrid cars and electric cars and remove some of the bells and whistles of normal sedans, right? Because you don't need to go from 0 to 100 in 6 seconds if you're driving with Uber,
right?
What
do you need that for?
You don't need that. So, you get one of those. Sometimes you get an Uber coming in a Porsche or, a Volkswagen, and you don't need that for Uber. So I think that is an indication that Uber and other car sharing services are here to stay.
That's right, particularly when they have segmented their market to mass market, mass affluence. You have that Uber Black and Uber Normal, or some other branding that they have there. So I guess the dichotomy here is whether or not there is enough market for Peugeot Citroën in the US.
I think there is certainly enough.
But they've been away for 25 years, in a consumer kind of driven car market where brand recognition is everything. Can they recover what lost ground they have?
I think they may also get competition from the self-driving cars. We don't know when that will come through, but a lot of news headlines being made, and the feeling is that it seems sooner rather than later. And self-driving cars are also perfect for the business model of car sharing.
7:58 right now, and buying a second-hand 7,000 ruby necklace on the internet, well, that sounds quite risky to me. But a startup has found a way to successfully sell previously owned luxury gems online. Gleam & Co. is a high-end consignment jewellery marketplace that features pieces ranging from, 124,000 Cartier diamond Art Deco bracelet, if you so please.
That's right. They say that they're aiming for that generation of older millennials who are trying to upgrade their jewellery. So they're apparently selling out of cheaper jewellery and going into higher end jewellery. And this is a place for them because their advantage and their selling point is that they have in-house valuers. So you don't have to be afraid of being ripped off selling to other websites. And this could actually be a place for some of this Panama papers people involved in that to recycle their money, right? Instead of starting tax havens, maybe they can sell a crown here or a piece of bracelet over there.
I see how you're connecting the dots. Very nice. 7:59 right now. We've got the news coming up just in a minute, but after the 8 o'clock news, Julian speaks to Sam Uy, group founder and managing director of OCK Group. Make sure you stay tuned next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.